Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up on the program, historian and author Jerome Green discusses the Wounded Knee Massacre, and we'll hear about the harp as an instrument of healing with harp therapist Tammy Briggs. But first, it's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of the latest state political news with the Dakota Political Junkies. And joining us today is Seth Tupper, editor of the Mitchell Daily Republic. Seth, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Sioux Falls Argus leader, political reporter David Montgomery. David, thanks for joining us as well.
Good to be here.
Well, former Governor Mike Rounds announced that he's forming an exploratory committee for a possible 2014 Senate run, did this last week, and while that really wasn't much of a surprise, was he expected to announce it at the Lincoln Day dinner in Dakota Dunes? David, I think you were there, weren't you?
Yes, I was there. It was a moderate surprise. It's not where you'd expect Rounds to make such an announcement. You'd expect that in his home in Pierre or one of the bigger cities in the state, but as it turned out, that's when he made the announcement, speaking to a local Republican dinner at the Union County GOP down there. And it was a moderate surprise, but not a huge surprise, given that he's been expected to do this for a long time. And maybe this was just the best opportunity he had.
So what's the point of an exploratory committee?
It relates to campaign finance law, in that you or I, as an ordinary citizen, we don't have to file reports with the Federal Election Commission about what if we give money or do political activities. But once you say you're a candidate, if you're running for something, then you are required to file campaign finance reports and all that. And what an exploratory committee is an intermediary stage where you're looking at a race, but you're not running. If this lets you raise a very limited amount of money, Governor Rounds now, once he files for this committee, can raise and spend $5,000 to do polling, to pay his way around the state, to visit with people, things like that. Until he says he's a candidate or does explicit running for election activities, he can keep this up. At a certain point, presumably, if he's actually serious about this, which by all intents he is, he'll become an actual candidate so we can raise more than $5,000, which, of course, doesn't get you very far these days.
Seth Tupper, do you think that former Governor Rounds has a strong base of support to build a campaign?
Well, he absolutely does. I mean, just from having won two elections for governor. And I think besides all the official purposes that David listed for the forming of the exploratory committee, he also has kind of an unofficial purpose, was look at all the burst of publicity that he received off of doing that. And, I think it would be bad manners 2 years before an election, before you've even gotten ahead of the current election, to come out and say, I'm running, and declare a candidacy. But this kind of allows him to sort of do that without actually doing it, and yet still get all the publicity and still get people interested in his potential future race and notify donors that, hey, I'm thinking about this. So I think he got a nice boost off of that. And obviously, as we all know, Mike Rounds knows what he's doing. He's been a successful politician now for a long time. So I think he has a major base of support. For those of us who like politics, if Tim Johnson would run for re-election, and Tim Johnson has already run against John Thune, that was a clash of the titans. I think a race against Mike Rounds would be the same. So it's good for politics, and I think good for the state that we have such high caliber people interested in these jobs.
Looking ahead to 2014, who are some of Mike Rounds' possible Republican opponents in a primary?
Well, I don't know. You go to Kristi Noem, obviously. Whether she would challenge him in a primary, I don't know. But if she gets through her current House race, maybe she would be interested in moving up to the Senate. Other than that, I wouldn't be surprised at all, given the way the political climate now, if he has some sort of a Tea Party challenge, if somebody arises from that wing of the party to challenge him. But beyond that, I don't know that, I think Mike Rounds is popular within the party. I don't know that there'd be a lot of people itching to challenge him, and especially with his fundraising prowess and his profile. That'd be a pretty steep hill to climb.
David Montgomery, if Tim Johnson decides not to run for a fourth term for Senate, are you aware of any Democrats who might be willing to slip in there and make a run for it?
Well, there's sort of three names that keep coming up in terms of the Democratic bench. You've got former Representative Stephanie Hursa-Sandlin, who, of course, has won statewide elections before, lost in 2010, and passed on running for a rematch in 2012 against Kristi Noem. There's Brendan Johnson, the son of Tim Johnson, currently the U.S. Attorney for South Dakota, pretty highly regarded, strong personality. Looks like he'd be a good campaigner. Hasn't run for office yet, but he's highly regarded in Democratic circles. He could run. And there's the Sioux Falls mayor, Mike Huther, who's also the mayor of the biggest city in the state and is a Democrat. And he's also mentioned as a possible statewide candidate.
Well, before we get to 2014, we still have a 2012 election. And locally, Republican Representative Brian Gosch's spot on the fall election ballot is in danger for notarizing his own nominating petitions. How serious is this issue, Seth?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, to the public at large, I don't think it's all that serious. I mean, anything dealing with elections, obviously, and proper protocol with an election is serious. I mean, it is the foundation of our democracy, you know, that we have appropriately conducted and elections. So, I mean, you know, you don't want to downplay anything when it comes to an election. But, you know, it's something that is more, I think, in David's story, somebody had called this inside baseball. And it somewhat is that. But, you know, what's most fascinating to me about it is the challenge coming from Stephanie Strong, from the sort of the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party, challenging a fellow Republican. And you've got this continual push by a certain wing of the party against the mainstream of the party. And, you know, you'd think Democrats have to be licking their chops over that. But this will be a real true test of Democrats, too. You know, you have a time now when the Republicans are still very strong in the state but are divided. Can the Democrats organize themselves and get momentum going and capitalize on that, or can they not? Because if they can't do it now, with Republicans having infights over things as ridiculous as I wouldn't say ridiculous, but things as minor to the public's perception as notarizing, you know, paperwork, Republicans are fighting over that. You'd think that Democrats could jump in and maybe capitalize on that, but we'll see. It'll be a test for them to see if they can do that.
David, are you aware of how common it is for candidates to notarize their own petitions?
It's not unheard of. There's one other candidate who did that this cycle, a Democrat, David Mitchell, from Mitchell, who also notarized some of his things, and that ended up not being challenged in court. The Democratic Party had to sue to get him on the ballot, but that case was decided on some other aspects of his petition, some errors that Jason Gant had identified in those petitions. Gant ultimately decided not to challenge Mitchell's notarized petitions. And I talked with Mitchell yesterday, and he argued that this is not a big deal, that it's certainly in the spirit of the notary law, if not the letter as well, and saying that he argued it was intended to stop people from notarizing things where they might have a business or financial interest rather than notarizing their own election petitions.
If Brian Gosch isn't on the ballot this fall, how would this shake up the Republican leadership? Because I believe he's in position to be the next Speaker of the House?
Yes. Traditionally, he's the Speaker pro tempore in the House, which traditionally becomes the next Speaker. It's sort of this pro tempore, sort of an assistant Speaker who learns the job over 2 years, fills in when the Speaker has to do other things, and then when 2 years later, traditionally, that person becomes the Speaker. But right now, there's not really anybody in the House who has that experience. The current Speaker, Val Rausch, is leaving. I believe Roger Hunt, Representative Roger Hunt from Sioux Falls, a former Speaker, is on the way out. So someone might have to sort of learn on the fly how to be Speaker of the House. The other interesting thing is that the Speaker position is elected by the entire legislature, not by the majority party. So depending on how these fractures in the Republican Party play out, there could be opportunities for coalitions between Democratic legislators and dissident Republicans to elect an alternative candidate to be Speaker of the House.
Seth Tupper, how does this this issue then go back to Secretary of State Jason Gant in regards to more fallout to some of the controversy that's been going on over the past few months in the Secretary of State's office?
Well, he certainly had a rocky start. I don't know that more attention has ever been paid to a Secretary of State than Jason Gant has received in his first bit of time in office, and that's probably not a good thing for him. I think I said the last time on this show that, you know, it's kind of like an offensive lineman. You only hear about them when they do something wrong or get in trouble. So I think if it were up to him, he wouldn't be in the news so much. I don't know if that's a coincidence or what, or if it's his inexperience in the office. But, I don't know. But I think it's more about, as David has said, more of the infighting within the party. I mean, right now, this issue with Stephanie Strong and Brian Gosch it seems to be more about that than with anything. What I don't get about this whole thing is whatever the rule is, I think that's what the public's concern is, you know, with the notarization. Let's just figure out what the rule is and whatever it is, it is. I don't understand why it, I think that's the trouble that people have with that is why should this be so difficult? And that's maybe a reflection on the Secretary of State that, you know, he needs to get this figured out and taken care of for the future.
You mentioned Republican infighting. This is probably related to that, I think. In the news this morning, Governor Dennis Dugard has asked Attorney General Marty Jackley to investigate emails and robocalls that have been placed to residents around the state. David Montgomery, I think you've been following this a little bit. What is going on here?
Well, for the past month or two, there have been a series of robocalls and email attacks going out around the state. Generally attacking establishment Republicans, leaders in the legislature, for a variety of issues, usually citing specific bill votes, and for example, a vote to close a program giving tuition assistance for veterans pursuing graduate degrees, and using that to argue that candidates are against the military or against gun rights or a variety of things like that. And these calls, most importantly for the news today, don't really identify who's paying for them, and they don't say anything. Sometimes I'd name a group that isn't registered with the Secretary of State's office or the Federal Election Commission. It's really hard to know who's actually paying for these calls, and you can't get reports saying who's giving the money and how much are they spending and things like that. That's what the investigation is going into, whether there are campaign finance laws being broken here. Supporters have said that, while not identifying who's behind it, people who are sympathetic have said that there's not any laws being broken because these calls aren't actually telling you to vote for or against someone, and they're saying that makes them just like any other advertising rather than like a political ad that had its own special rules.
Who's being targeted in these calls?
Mostly leaders in the legislature. Senator Tim Rave, chairman of the South Dakota Republican Party, was one of the most recent targets. House Majority Leader David Lust, Brian Gosch have been targeted. Representative Hal Wick, one of the whips in the House, the assistant leaders. I think the Majority Leader in the Senate, Russell Olson, has been targeted, and a few others, all sort of in the leadership or allied with the leadership. If you don't want to be attacked, it's a bad time to be in the Republican leadership.
And I think, David, in your political smokeout blog this morning related to this, you mentioned this is now that the establishment is fighting back?
They've sort of sat and taken this for a while, maybe complained about it a little bit, but haven't done anything. And now we're seeing some of the power of the establishment being brought to bear. There's going to be an investigation. There's going to be a lawsuit. We're going to see subpoenas filed, which will hopefully get to the bottom of this. One way of looking at it is sort of a realpolitik, just who's people exercising power. You can also look at it as they're just trying to uncover wrongdoing, or you can look at it as corrupt officials abusing their power to crack down on political dissent. It all depends on your perspective.
Seth Tupper, what do you think about this situation, this controversy with these robocalls?
Well, I'd sure like to know more about it. I think we all would. And you have to suspect, I think the natural suspicion is this is more one wing of the party battling the other. And I think it's, I'm always a little bit disappointed when you see somebody attack somebody else without attaching their name to it, and especially something this organized and apparently well-funded. You would hope that people would be courageous enough to put their name to something like that. So I think we'd all like to know for sure who's behind this, and I think there'll probably be numerous reporters looking into that right now, and hopefully we will get to the bottom of it. It sure gives us something to talk about and write about, though.
Yeah.
It makes for an interesting political season.
Well, speaking of the political season, Kristi Noem and Matt Verilek race for Congress continues. More TV ads are coming out, and I don't think either Noem or Verilek have mentioned their opponents in their ads. David Montgomery, why do you think that is?
I think when you mention your opponent in an ad criticizing them, I think it makes it more personal for voters, and voters generally say they don't like personal attacks. Of course, the counter to that is political scientists and strategists will say that negative attacks work in campaigns. So by not mentioning names, it lets the candidate sort of make their case, both introducing themselves and their case against the other side, without letting it be too personal and without thus giving that sort of negative taste in voters' mouths. So it's sort of adding a little bit of sugar to the bad-tasting medicine, if you will. By not mentioning the name, but I bet we're going to see some names mentioned before this campaign is over.
Seth Tupper, do you think the nature of these ads are going to change, the tone of these ads are going to change as we get closer to Election Day?
I think so. I mean, I think Matt Verilek is still in sort of introduction mode. His ads, which I think have been pretty effective, have so far just been introducing him to voters, who he is, where he came from, what he believes. So I think, eventually he's going to transition into some sharper ads, against his opponent. And, it's been interesting to watch. He's had a couple ads out that I've seen that have been more introductory, more plain spoken, him talking directly to the viewer. And the only one I've seen from Representative Noem has been sort of a long voiceover with just a shot of her at the end, and I think that was even some canned footage from the last campaign that they're showing of her. So I was kind of surprised by that. To see the ads from Verilek looking maybe a little bit more savvy at this point from Noem, and I'll be interested to see if that changes as we go forward as well.
David,
my impression is that that first ad that Noem put out was sort of a preliminary ad designed to keep her in the air at the same time as Verilek, rather than being part of her main ad barrage.
Okay. Well, David, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Happy to be here.
And Seth, thanks for your time as well.
You bet.
Seth Tupper is editor of the Mitchell Daily Republic, and David Montgomery is a political reporter with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, where he also writes the Political Smoke Out blog. The Dakota Political Junkies are a regular Wednesday feature of Dakota Midday. Coming up after a short break, we'll talk with historian and author Jerome Green. He's currently finishing up a book about the Wounded Knee Massacre. And then we'll hear about the harp as an instrument of healing with harp therapist Tammy Briggs. I'm Carl Gerke, and you're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.